Hi, I'm Adam from One Commons, and we are a project dedicated to building a free and open cloud. So what does that mean? So imagine, just like with open source code, free code, you can take it, it's free to use, modify, fork as you like. What if you could do that with like a live website? Go check out, look at how it was built on the back end, fork it, make changes, rerun it yourself. So that's the vision behind what we consider a free and open cloud, giving you the same freedoms that you have with open source code with actual cloud services. And so why do we want to do that? I mean, basically, the reality is everything is moving to the cloud. More and more, our lives just depend on services running on the cloud. It's harder and harder just to like run your own open source software yourself. And, you know, basically nobody wants to run their own software. Nobody, certainly not their own hardware, their own servers. It's so much easier to get started with a cloud service. The costs are generally a lot cheaper in terms of usage pricing without having big upfront costs. And so that's really putting open source software at a disadvantage. Again, people just aren't running open source software themselves. It's hard to take the effort. And it's also, for the bigger open source projects, it's undermining their business models. So we are starting to see a project shift away from pure open source licenses, like you've seen that with MongoDB or Elasticsearch, and the big cloud providers are just undermining the basic ways that a lot of these open source bigger projects are funded. And so our goal, we think there's a way that, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too, that we can have a free and open cloud where you get the ease and simplicity of using the cloud and cloud services without giving up the freedom and control of open source. And that we call that open cloud services. And, you know, it's easy to think of. So if you just look at, say, the Open Knowledge Foundation has this definition we see here of what openness means with code and with data. And so we can see the same thing with, we just apply the same thing with a cloud service. And with the idea that, you know, the only limitation around the openness is, of course, preserving your own privacy around your data and your you know, sovereignty over your identity and your data. And so that's our notion of open cloud services. But a cloud service is more than just code. We know that. So if you think about running a cloud service, you both have the code and then you have the data that runs on it, that's either, you know, created by the service or given by the user. And then finally, you know, your service is running somewhere. And so, you know, there's this hosting component. And so if you think about openness for something to be truly open, for a cloud service to be truly open, you know, it's both the code. So we can look at this as these different levels. So we think of it as different levels of having an open closed service. And level one is just the code. So take an example like WordPress. WordPress is open source. WordPress.com, the cloud service is not. So that's, you can think of that as open level one. When you add open data, well, then you have to look at something maybe like Wikipedia, where it's both the code is open and the data is open, or OpenStreetMaps, another example of that. And then finally, the third one, we actually have open hosting you have freedom hosting where you can run the service anywhere. It's not tied to a particular thing. And that's where the decentralization and the Web3 technologies come into play. And that's why we're here in this track. And so those are examples like, for example, like Git as a service, I can run a Git server for serving my code. That's completely decentralized. They communicate. GitHub, of course, is just not open service at all. It's closed at all levels. Matrix, which we're using here at Fosdem, that's another example of a, you know, a level three hosting service, in that we could run the code and control the data and run it wherever we want. So that's how we're breaking it down. And so talking about, again, so what do these freedoms and this openness give you? And so one way that we think about it, and one motivating factor behind what we're doing, is that those freedoms give you a certain resistance. You can call evil resistance. So we, some of you probably remember a few years ago, a large corporation, you might recognize their colors there, had a motto, "Don't be evil." At some point they, decided that wasn't them anymore. So they dropped that motto. But, if you could build a service that guarantees these freedoms, and you have this resistance, so it can't be evil. Well, I mean, it can't, of course, there's lots of ways to be evil in this world, but we have these limitations. And that's one of the reasons why most of us are really excited about Web3, is that the protocols provide you with fundamental guarantees over, the data, et cetera. And so if we could build that into these open cloud services, that can make a better internet and a better world. And so let's kind of break down what we mean by these different levels of openness. So code, start there. We're all familiar with this. This is open source code and free code. And so, the Free Software Foundation, Richard Stallman, when they came up with this, they decide there's the four freedoms that underline free code. And one, the first freedom is just being able to use it. And so in the context of open cloud services, being able to run the software, being able to modify the code, being able to freely share the code, and then finally being able to share what you modify, which is, what we call forking. And so those are the four basic freedoms that underline code. So if we apply that again to the next level, to data, then we start seeing, freedom of access. That's like the data portability movement around open code. If you want to be able to modify data, then you have to have interoperable formats that are extendable and interoperable. If you want to share it, then that's where open data licenses come in. But then you also have to have rules and licenses that preserve privacy for sharing to work. And then finally, remixing, forking, that's where you need more than just the data. You need APIs that enable different services to combine and expose the data they're creating. And so the final level is hosting. And again, this is where the decentralization technology comes in. So at the most fundamental rate, if you want the freedom, another way to look at, so the first freedom was for developers around code. The second freedom is more around users. These are the freedoms for the data because it's their data. The final one for hosting is more around people running the services. If I want to run my own service, I want to be able to do it on my infrastructure, and I want that freedom. And so if you look at those different freedoms, one is simply being able to access it and run it. And so that's kind of like reproducibility. You need to have a way to take a service and run it somewhere else. And then second is when they modify it, not having that code depend on other proprietary services, being tied to a particular proprietary platform. Sharing, this is where the concept of federation comes in. So email, classic federation, email servers talk to each other, they can share the data, Jabber for chat. And then finally, the concept of remixing, we can map to the idea of full decentralization, where, again, classic blockchain protocol, so a financial transaction, everyone access to that, it's or peer-to-peer, they have complete interoperability, as long as every piece of blockchain is decentralized. So that's another example of giving all those freedoms, those different levels for hosting. And so, but if we take, so if like the blockchain is around a particular type of transaction, guaranteeing that data is available to everyone and that we can trust it. But if we're talking about open cloud services, we're talking about things that have to work with the protocols we have today. You have a web browser, it talks over HTTPS to a server. And so to guarantee those freedoms, just like all these freedoms, you have to have some way to trust it. So if I can't trust the service I'm talking to, and because it's anyone's running it, we're not going to be able to get there in terms of building something that's truly open, these cloud services. And so just kind of breaking down how we can get there. So today, you know, you basically, you know, for most of us, we just are trusting whatever's on our machine, our laptop or desktop, whatever software is using there. It talks to some server out there. We don't really know. It's a black box what it's doing. We just have to place trust that they're going to do the right thing with our data, that the code is doing what it says it does. And then them in turn, the person running that service, the company running that service, is trusting the hosting provider that they're running on, the cloud provider, that, you know, they're going to run their software that was. They're going to run their server as they claim they will. And so but this kind of exists today. It just would take a lot of effort to do it. Today, if I run, you know, a pure open source operating system like Linux on like a, say a laptop that has like a secure boot technology, and then I'm running like Chromium browser or Gecko browser or Mozilla browser, I can basically have assurance that I know that exactly what code is running on there, and I can trust it. And it can, on the other hand, what's being introduced with the big cloud providers like Google's Titan chip is this ability where they can they can guarantee that your compute workload is running on their machine, and you can have remote attestation where they can go out and talk, and so you as the application provider running your service can really trust your code is running as they say on their cloud provider. And so there's a lot of work going on. So, but in between that, we still don't know. And that's where open cloud services come in. So the technology, if you could create reproducible one, something that's open, so it's all open source code, and there's reproducible infrastructure, so we know exactly how that is being built on into a container, and we use these technologies on the other end, now we can start to have assurances that no matter where it's running, it is what it says it is. And for the data, we can, you know, rely on other services like Holochain, example of something that you can rely on in terms of relying on the data. And then, so what we need to do for this to work is to build a protocol so that your browser, when it talks to that application that you're connecting to, it says it is what it is. It's running exactly what it says it is. And we're not that far from being able to do that, because we could add an extension to the TLS protocol that, just like today, they have certificate transparency that can these protocols to see that those certificates are what they say they are. We could do something similar with remote attestation, where we could say we put the remote attestation from the server hardware on a blockchain and use something like certificate transparency, so that the protocol, when your browser connects, it can actually verify that this hash being sent through the protocol is what it is, and corresponds to this chain of reproducible source code running your application. And so once we do that, now we have this freedom to trust that different people running different services are ones that are running what they say they do and are conforming based on, you know, the fact that the source code is open. They're conforming to whatever licenses around your data usage you have. And so that's how we think we can get to this vision ultimately. And then the next step and the next part of this getting there is, of course, fundamentally running a service consumes resources, it takes money, and something like money. And so we have to have a way to fund that, or else there's not going to be very many open source services out there, open cloud services, if there's no way to fund it. And so funding is obviously a tricky thing. Funding open source has always been sort of a holy grail, a thing to kind of figure out. But one thing we could step back and think is there is something like $300 billion a year